have achieved. By being here, you have set free so many people that were oppressed. The consciousness, the mentality, the mind control, in a good sense, with democracy and compassion at the uproot and the very foundation, we have been able to free the most important political figures, social liberation figures of our hour. We, this church, we were able to free people that none other could have freed. Even today, as we prepare the machinery, tomorrow to be able to free one of our brothers that's been caught in a very peculiar morass. Even the attorney said, it looks like the conditions have been set up to destroy this man. And even well, destroy People's Temple and everything it stands for. But your being here tomorrow will give Brother Lewis an opportunity. Otherwise, he would be dead. He would be finished. There would be no hope whatsoever. But by gathering here in the name of the church, and of course, who should be more entitled to be the church than Christ? Because Christ makes up the church. Christ is the head of the church, then indeed we are entitled to be called a church. It's not based on whether we believe in the furniture of heaven or the temperature of hell or believe in the sky god. The basis of a church is, does it have a head? And we certainly know our head. We know that the very same Christ, the very same Redeemer, is the head of this church. We don't have to pray to be a church. We don't have to sing about heaven to be a church. We don't have to project about flying away to be a church. That which makes a church is because Christ is in our midst. And if you don't know Christ is in our midst, you don't know your right foot from your left foot. Would be indeed wonderful if I could take all of you and we could invade the mines, we could invade the cotton fields, but they have poisoned my people. People that were called by my name, justice, have been robbed of their own inheritance and robbed of their own ancestry. And they have a false name, the honky god and the honky form of godliness, denying the power thereof. Even in the cotton fields, they're singing lullabies about heaven. In the mines, the white niggers are singing about heaven that will come, are praying about a God that will take them out of their inclement conditions. The labor unions have been sold out. Even the heads of them are sold to the great conspiracy. So we are forced to use that which is available to us, the institution of religion, and we will use it until we bring about its demise. Yea, it's destruction. We will use it until it comes tumbling down, because our destiny is to destroy every form of religion. So glad. But a time is coming, and it's not far off. Yea, not in the distant future, but in the immediate future. And they that are out in those clay fields and out on those Mississippi flats, and out in those cotton fields stretched across America, and down in the mines, yea, and in the steel mills, I will make a church in those steel mills. I will make a revolution in those fields, and I'll make a revolution in those mines, and we will not have to go through this form. Because you are faithful, I will free you to bring the revolution to the streets, to the highways and the hedges. Glory. Peace and wonder. You say you keep speaking, God Almighty, you keep speaking about being a revolutionary. I'm speaking exactly what Jesus said. He said, you are they upon whom the ends of the world come. You have stirred up the people. He was called a revolutionary. He said he was one who stirreth up the people. He said, you are they that will turn the world upside down. I guess that means a revolution. Peace. And I would tell you, oh, you gainsayers, you publicans and Sanhedrin council and you false prophets and you lying Judases that have been in our midst, all you that have even been agents, counteragents, provocateurs, we've even had a woman in our midst who's been a provocateur, a paid agent. It matters not who you are. We'll make a revolution individually or collectively. If we can't make it as a group, I will send them into the highways and the hedges, one in every city, and I will shake the whole nation before my day comes. To behold. Peace. There is no life outside of Christ, which is the anointing, which is the revolution. There is nothing outside of it. There is no purpose to exist. There's no purpose to breathe. There's no purpose to be in this swamp without this revolution. We could water it down and we could save ourselves. We could have fine cars and fancy mansions and extensive lands, but we would have lost our soul. I want you to keep the pulse beat of your soul, the revolution, the Christ. For it's better to die before your time and spend yourself in a great upheaval that will turn the world upside down. It is better that you go early than to dry out, to bleach out, to wear out, to compromise out. You can see feeble people walking up and down the streets, poor people feeling their way along, afraid of any wind that might blow, for fear it might blow them down, afraid that someone will push them, that their bones might be broken, no place to lay their head, no one to care, old and gray and lonely, no one that wants them. I say it would better be that you die young with your soul than to waste your way up into the older years in the 80s and 90s and have nothing but a carcass, nothing but a shell. As for me and my house, I will live and I will die with the revolution. We are not recommending violence. We are not recommending terror. We are not recommending guerrilla warfare. But we are declaring this, that we will not see our sons and daughters conscripted into a money-making war again. We will not see our sons and daughters degenerate by fascists who want to control our minds and take over us as slaves. Not only control our property, which they already do, and control our government and decide who will be put into power, but we have declared and we make this affirmation, we will resist with the last drop of our blood before they take our children. And I talked to the most prominent blacks in this town, black leaders, black liberationists, black attorneys, white attorneys even in Los Angeles, and the government reeks with it, even leaders like Mr. Stark, the banker from the East Bay, who's your congressman. He said we are on the verge of being taken over by an emergency legislation in the name of keeping order, but it will be a fascist takeover, a dictatorial takeover, takeover by a renegade. I heard the CBS tonight denounce him, or yesterday denounce him, and say he was irresponsible, unprofessional. Every network bombarded him. He's a banker. They bombarded him because he told the truth. People don't want to hear the truth. He said that the black nation is in danger. The people who are poor are in danger. Everyone who wants freedom is in danger. He said any moment the president might declare a national emergency and put everyone in a concentration camp on the basis that he's trying to protect us from communism or protect us from some other imaginary ism. And for that, he's been attacked on every radio station, and he's a banker, a white banker. Oh, yet let me tell you, fascist, let me tell you, fascist pigs, let me tell you, warlords, you've got 1,000 people here sitting quietly tonight, enjoying each other, playing with their chimpanzee, singing, just making, marking time, treading water. They're being very gentle. We're very corralled. But if you move much further, we're going to loose this company upon the entire world. Those of you that are now interested in perpetuating the cause, I think you have the vision. Without a vision, the people perish. Even the chimpanzee was raising his fist and dancing back there. So if the chimpanzee has got the message, and I really think he understands a lot more than we give him credit for, surely we ought to understand. We know what we're doing now. We're protecting our innocents, our children, and our seniors. We do not want their blood to be shed. We do not want them to be hurt anymore. We've had too many members, as I discussed the one yesterday, precious black member that stands proud and stands tall in this room. Not a slave, just an ordinary woman in Mississippi. She lived on a plantation. They still have them. The man that owned the plantation came in and raped her. She was pregnant with her child. Her husband was run off, and she never heard of him again. He could have been killed and dropped in one of those Mississippi bottoms. The father raped her. Then the son raped her. She aborted the child, but the son had syphilis. I'm talking about just yesterday's case. You say, you're so angry. If you had a heart, you'd be angry too. And some of you are angry. A good many of you are angry. White and black. A lot of you have got just about as much as you want to take from these. Peace. I think Uncle Tom's beginning to get the message too. I don't approve of violence. I don't approve of acts of terror. But I notice that out of an act of terror, the whole school boards are quaking everywhere. They're changing policies and changing about their bio dossiers, their files of complex nature that are turned over, even turning young people over to detention camps. I notice out of the one death and the one near death over in the East Bay that they're changing their whole pattern. I notice the San Francisco school board voted to stop having these police on the campus. You say, well, they need police on the campus. We don't need what happened in Emeryville. A little 14-year-old boy by the name of Guyon, isn't it? 14 years of age. He was on his way home. They shot him down like a dog. And all he could do was cry for his mama. Mama, he fell dead in her arms, crying mama. And they said he had a gun. And no one, not even the fascist press, not the fascist newspapers or radio or TV, not one of them have been able to say that there was any gun there. Those policemen killed him in cold-blooded murder. There was no gun present. They said they saw the fire from the gun. Now they're saying, well, they saw some smoke. They thought it was a gun. Everything has its reaction. Every action has a corresponding reaction. I do not approve of Symbionese Army or what it did. I'm not advocating that. But I can only say this, and I shouldn't, but I will. I can understand it. I said, I can understand it. A 14-year-old black boy died, and a black man heads his school administration who says he's a superintendent of all the people. But the situation has been corrupted to such a degree that black children are the ones that are being singled out for special education. I talked to one yesterday, singled out for detention, singled out with a file that they cannot get free from. Some of your children right now are being labeled just because they're black. And I think it's come a time in America, sure, it may bring down fascism. But I, in some ways, I wonder if it wouldn't be better for it all the way, fall all the way, than rather than live it halfway. I'd rather just see it come out with its ugly self and show its monstrosity. That's what they decided in Greece yesterday. Those students, for 3 days, they decided they'd show you how bad Greece was. They wasn't going to let you believe that there was any democracy there, because Greece, the general said, we're giving more democracy. We're giving the power back to the people. The students stood up and protested in every university across Greece. And you saw those fascist pigs. I'm watching you. I'm watching how you're reacting to this sermon. You saw those fascist pigs come out. Even the radio and TV didn't try to cover it. They beat those Greek young people till they laid in their pools of blood. They denied them ambulances. They wouldn't allow a doctor to minister to them. 1,000 were seen in the streets of Athens. Over 1,000 laying in their own blood. And the tanks rolled right over them into the university. At least the Greek youth achieved one thing. They showed the world that there was a masquerade over there, that the fascist pigs still control the thing, and they brought it out in the open. Please. I'd rather deal with my enemy out in the open, even though he lets you live. That's no commendation to you. That means that you don't have enough soul. If he's not attacking you frontally, if he's not attacking you openly, that means you're not dealing with him properly. So I'm glad a time has come in America that Uncle Toms are beginning to hear. You may one time sell out and say, yes, sir, no, sir. You may have one time been a white man's nigger, but the day is finished. At this very moment, I have a desire to see my children grow. You are my children. I have a desire to see those young people grow up. What a tug of war I go through. I went back to the bathroom and I just had to agonize a few tears, because I thought, I don't want to be able to put a position of my people in a position where they'll have to make decisions on basis of subjects they don't understand. And I went back in that bathroom for a moment. I said to a couple of the people there, I said, I can hardly stand this. And I don't believe in crying openly and going through a lot of hullabaloo. And I didn't cry very long, but I went back there and I thought, oh, why do I have to be the one to present the truth? Why do I have to tear people's lives up with the truth? But then I know, you've never lived until you know the truth. How can you live in fascist America today, when black people are being exterminated, experimented on with like guinea pigs, laying in streets and alleys? From Newark, from Boston, from Chicago, even down to Los Angeles and in this very bay. How can you be content to sit in front of an old TV, sit in your old routine luxury, sit on property that's been robbed from the poor of the earth? Every chair, every cushion, the rubber in it has been stolen. Every fiber has been stolen from the colored people of the world. In Vietnam to Africa, everything that you possibly enjoy has been raped from 2 out of 3 of the world's people. Taken from them at gunpoint, made to work as slaves for 16 to 20 cents a day, die at 25 and 30, become grandmothers before they're 35. How could you possibly stand to live in your fibrous beds, in your cushion chairs, in all the luxuries of America, AMERICKKKA? How could you stand it when the mines are reeking with white, black, and brown that will die of that awful lung rot, silicosis that will rot their lungs out before they're 45? How can you stand it when young blacks are being already put in detention camps in Philadelphia by the Philadelphia Crime Commission? Interesting that Dr. Foster belonged to the Philadelphia Crime Commission before he came to the East Bay. For what I'm saying today, I'm laying my life on the line. Not yours. You can run for hiding. You can say, I didn't know the man. I didn't understand what he was saying. You can run for cover. But what I'm saying tonight, they could kill me for, with the law. They wouldn't have to shoot me, because I'm telling too much truth now. It's all right if you talk in generalities, but if you point out the pigs and point out the stoolies of the pigs and the agents of the pigs, then you've gone too far. But I don't want to lay anymore in cushion chairs, and never did anyway. I don't want to lay in luxury. I don't even like to even bother to look at clothes. I hate them so, because there's not a piece of clothing that has not been made off of the sweat and the blood of our brothers and sisters across this world. There's not one fancy thing you've got in your car. Even the rubber that you ride home on tonight has been robbed from the poor colored yellow and black from Vietnam to South Africa. It's been robbed. They don't even have a decent meal. They can't even find a place to lay their head. Of course, maybe you'd have been better if I had not told you. Maybe you'd have been able to endure it. But you would have found out about it one time. When you got old, you would have found out how cruel the system is. That's why I've got so many seniors here who want the power given to the people. They come out in rain. They come out in all kinds of icy weather. They may be 75 and 80, but they know how bad fascist America is. Because when you get old, you find out how bad it is. They don't want you. They don't even want to give you any time. They don't want to give you a house. They don't want to give you proper medical care. You got to stand in a line till you fall faint. Oh, my black nose, that black woman, that's not the only black woman. That very black woman, not too many years ago, sitting in my church, I'd single her out, but it would be too painful for her. But I dealt with that case just this weekend. Now, I want you to know that's going on in Mississippi while we're sitting here. The same thing that happened to our precious sister. The same thing. Run out. When she went and got syphilis and her baby was destroyed and born with, she miscarried and her baby was born with syphilis, born blind, died. Her husband had run away, are killed in some Mississippi bottom. That plantation owner and his son, she went to the police to try to get just some help. The sheriff told her, get out of this town, get out of this county tonight, or you'll die. All over America, there are blacks, poor whites and browns that are stealing away for their liberty. While you sit here fighting to breathe, there's still terrorist sheriffs around this land. There's still some of them that'll say, like the man I talked to yesterday, Attorney Britton, on the behalf of Chris, he said, if it were in the South, if it were any place but here, and it's still a little uncivilized, they'd say, Chris Lewis, What got a hold of you last night? What happened? Some nigger got killed. Now go home and don't do that no more. He didn't do it in the first place. There's a lot of intrigue to this that you don't know. I mean, it was a provoked situation that I haven't time to go into, but that's the way it is all over the land. If one black kills another, go on home tonight. Because they want us to kill each other off. That's why we've got guns and knives free. Just as long as we don't get up to Russian Hills, as long as we don't go to Berkeley Hills or Beverly Hills, they don't care how many of us niggers we kill off. Is that the kind of life you want to live? Sometimes I don't know, and I struggle with it. I say, I'm so real, so revolutionary, so truthful, that you cannot be complacent. I make you either hot or cold. That's why people go out and are so vicious, because I'm the light. And when you are not going to live up to the light, you've got to try to put that light out. They try to press it out, try to cuss it out, or try to kill it out. Because there's no halfway ground with Jim Jones. You either follow him in the light, or you curse the light. And the light you have becomes darkness. And how gross that darkness. But my heart is always heavy, and I live death every day. Because to live and to come before you is the worst death. Oh, I have heard some of you say, I don't know whether I could be tortured. Surely now. What more torture is this that we go through? What more torture? I would rather, and some of you would rather, that they took your fingernails. You'd rather that they picked on your flesh than to go through and sit like here today. I sit here and I preached a sermon that should have opened the hearts of every human being. And I had somebody come up at the end and say, I come here to get my hand healed. I know you'll bless me. You won't let me go away. You won't let me go away without giving me a healing. How anyone could have sat through this morning's sermon that must be required listening of every member of this temple. I ask each group to see Brother Grubbs. There should be an assemblage in Redwood Valley on Tuesday, open for people to hear it. Should try to fit it in perhaps early Thanksgiving or someplace all through the weeks and the days ahead. Everyone must hear this sermon because it's a judgment seat sermon. And then you must decide whether you're able, because I present to you the challenge of giving your bodies as living sacrifices. Even yea, ready to give your body to be burned for this holy revolution. And if you cannot hear it, at least I want you to deal with it. But after you finish a sermon, the selfish people that pull on you and claw at you and want this and they want that, and I said, did you hear my sermon? No, I didn't hear it. Oh, yes, I heard it, but they didn't. Some people come in here, all they can think about is that toe ache. All they can think about is that little knee joint. All they're worried about is their back. They're all day, they're thinking, oh, Father, shut up. Get over with the singing. Get over with the offering. Get over with the preaching. Heal my back. Why, you asshole, you ought to have your ass kicked, not healed. What more torture for some of my staff there could there be than read these letters, selfish letters. Give me this, give me that, give me this, give me that. And Jesus said, the first revolutionary, and this is the greatest, there's a greater one in your midst now than Jesus. Because he said it out of his own mouth. The one that would come would do greater things. These things and greater. And I have proven that I have done the same things, and I have proven the greater. When I took out that sister last night in that wheelchair, doctor's hospital said no chance for her to walk. She came in here again today on her own power. Marvelous walking, still on her own power. Not just an hour, but a day into the next day. So I've done the greater works. But that's not my greatest work. Some of you look around to see who's healed. That's not my greatest work. The greatest work is that every day, every hour, I stand before you. I willingly give my life, knowing that somebody will be, I'm open season. I know that sometime they'll hire people to kill me because they're a little bit afraid to take me on the courts. They're now debating in their high councils. Do we want to kill him? Do we want to shoot him down like we did Kennedy? Or do we want to take a chance that he goes into the court and he might expose his truth to too many people? Perhaps we should kill him or maim him or make him paralyzed. Every day I come up and stand before you wrestling with that. You say, well, you're just God. I'm just like you. I feel just like you. I'd like to go home and get a good night's rest just like you. I would like to be able to eat in peace and rear my children in peace. But there is no peace for me because I must speak the truth. For if I did not speak the truth, I would be haunted for the eternal ages of time. I couldn't stand to live with myself if I held back the truth. I had to decide that. I've got wonderful sons and daughters. I had to decide. I can give them luxury. I can give them plenty of that. I made a million in business. I've had assets. I've turned most of the physical properties over. One building that your church now is drawing, you're drawing $35,000 on it, still do. I paid for every cent of it. I made a million. I would have turned it all over, if except for one fact that the attorneys say I should keep some back for litigation, for trial. Well, you say, trial, sure. The church cannot pay my trial, you know. You cannot pay. They've got that all made up, so you can't defend your leader. That has to come from other special raising, money raising, and so forth. So you think you'll go to trial? Either that or they'll kill me. There's no other way. People don't want Christ. They're no more ready for him today than they were in the days of Nazareth. They're no more ready for him today than they were when they nailed him between two thieves and wanted the murderer, Barabbas, to be freed and him nailed to the wall. No, they're so different. In fact, I think in many ways we're worse today. Stupid, idiotic questions people come up and ask me. Do you believe in getting saved? Do you believe in speaking in tongues? Do you believe in the blood? Get lost and go shit on yourself. Peace. So that is not a way that the Christ speaks. Indeed, that's the way the Christ speaks. In the original Hebrew, he said those very words. Sons of the devil, no. He didn't say that. He said sons of bitches. King James, that slave master, he dressed it up. You have any new people here tonight? No new people here tonight? Bless her heart. Give her some counsel. It's going to be, this is strong doctrine. You're sweet. Just remember, on Friday, this weekend, we had a woman fall dead because she came in the hospital, difficulties, she had blood pressure, out of control, heart out of control. She fell dead by the truth. She was going to die anyway. She was Pentecostal. She fell dead, and I raised her up, cured her, and she joined that church that night because of the truth that set her free. It's hard. In the Bible, Paul said, shit. Yes, he said it. He said, I count it all dung. You old timers know what dung means. Dung means shit. And he said, I count all these forms and religions dung that I might know Christ, the revolution, that I might know the anointing. He said, I count it all shit. Solomon talked about the shithills of religion. He called them dunghill. But dung in the Greek, in the Hebrew, in the Bible language is a dirtier language than even shit. It's one of the most obscene words you can find. So Jesus used words that he had to use to get across to people. And I'm glad there's only one new one here tonight. Because I have no desire to start people on this journey if they're not already there. But why is it that people who are ordinarily prepared to go to that glorious city, the enchanted city, a bejeweled city of enchanted inertia up there in the skies. Why is it all these people in their 80s and 90s don't want to go? They're here with Father Jones. Why is it they're here wanting to start a revolution? That ought to make you young people know there ain't no enchanted city of bejeweled inertia. There is no golden streets. Why is it I've got people here 80, 90, Sister Ever 98, all these people, why is it they're not wanting to fly away? The other night when I had such power raising the dead, raising people out of wheelchairs, seven to wheelchairs, I said, oh, you people, some of you are a little nervous. You act like you want to go to heaven. I said, stand up and I'll send you. I could not get one to go. It's pretty hard to convince you when you are at a casket and you've ever been by caskets. It's pretty hard to convince you that that's the way you want to go. When you look at somebody that looks like a stone mummy or a clay statue and look at these morticians after they get through making your last buck off you, the last vultures to get to you, the morticians. When you look at your loved ones, you don't even hardly recognize them. I've seen people I don't even hardly recognize. It's awfully hard then to believe that's the way you want to go. That's why I work so hard to keep people from dying. 478 times this year I've raised them from the dead when they've been laying in their own bowel movement, their excretia, been carried in hemorrhaging. Yes, sir. Hemorrhaging at the bowels, and I've raised them. All life gone. I fight to keep life here because, well, let's say, none of you ever been in the grave and then come back to tell us what it is 6 feet under. And good old Sister Neighbors, who sits down here in our congregation, when I raised her, healed her the same day she broke her leg in three places. I get so tired of going through this. I know you do too, but we got folk here that don't know this. That's what I mean. I'd rather have them pluck out my eyes, pull my hair follicles out one by one, take my skin like vultures, and have to go through all this over and over and over again. You think I enjoy talking about Sister Neighbors? My God. I'd rather talk about a crap game. Oh, Sister Neighbors, I love. She's beautiful. But I've repeated this till I know it. It goes over in my brain in my sleep. That's why I can't sleep, because it's more hellish to go to sleep than it is to stay awake. What happened to Sister Neighbors? All right, Sister Neighbors. She died. 106 degree temperature. They had her in a mortuary. She was in the morgue. And that old spirit was fighting, and I told her daughter at 3 o'clock in the morning, I said, if she wants to live, she'll live. We will declare she'll live. And she fought. She was way up there. Sister Neighbors is up there in her 80s. I'm sure pressing on towards her 90. And she didn't want to go. She was still fighting, Father, get me out of this mess. I don't want to go. And I love that song, and everybody should learn it. It should be the theme of your heart. What is that song? How's it go? Feel like staying here. Just listen. I feel like staying here. Mother, where should I start going now? I'd just love to hear her. I differ with her. But anyway, because I know if I went to the ground, if even for a final, I'd like to be there. You understand me? How many read me? If it were final, I'd like to be there. Oh, the glory of being covered up by clean earth. Because you sure get a lot of shit when you're around humans. So I don't worry about it. But our seniors don't worry about it either. But some of them want to give their life for something. They don't want to grow old and lonely and have to fight for a place to lay their head down, fight to get health. They want to get in the fight. They want to make their life. One of the seniors said to me, 77 years this morning, she said, just let me be the first one to be burned. And Paul, you know, speaks in Corinthians, they gave their bodies to be burned. She said, let me be burned. She said, I'd like to be the first one. She said, I'd like to take me some tanks. She said, I'd like to take me some buckets, and I'd like to go you know where, because I won't tell it because it might tend to incriminate us. She said, I'd like to take them and throw it all around and throw it on me and then throw it on him and go, boom. She's 77 years of age. Now think of that. She didn't come here to get saved. I've healed her and healed her and healed her. She said, you've healed me so many times, I want to do something now worthwhile. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Glory. What was your question? What was her question there going out? Sister Runnels, what was her question? I wanted to ponder that again. Yeah, the question she had in her mind earlier today.
I just want to know, are we supposed to feel sorry for the people that won't pay you any attention or won't even come hear your words?
Well, you're supposed to, but you can't. Don't worry about it. Naturally, you can't. I felt that question was highly relevant right now. For people that won't listen to my justice message, no. You don't worry with it. Don't worry about your feelings towards them. You feel like knocking the crap out of them, but you don't do it, and you won't do it. And that's the way you judge yourself, not by what you think, but by your actions. We've never lifted up our hand to do violence to anyone. You can't keep, as I said, those feathered birds or thoughts going over your head, but you can keep them from nesting in your hair. All right. Thank you. I wanted to ask you that, what was on your mind. Lovely people, I don't know whether you digest what I said tonight. It'd be good if you read this back to yourself. Reflect on it. Just living is the proof of my love. Just coming in here is my greatest miracle. Willing to take on your troubles. Stay 2 hours as I did yesterday with Brother Lewis's attorney and let him know just exactly what we expect. That's where I prove my love. But some of you think it's so wonderful that I can heal the sick and raise the dead. You say, oh, that's why I love him so. You ought to love him because he gets up, pulls his body, sits in here, and preaches the truth. Because I'll tell you, the only heaven I'd like to see is 6 feet under the ground. You ring me? That's why I've got no toleration for those who want to commit suicide. Mm-mm. No toleration. I've got compassion, but no toleration. Because I come into this earth wanting to get out of it. You understand what I'm saying? Some of you understand the mystery? I came in here wanting out. When you commit suicide, it's an act of hostility and rebellion to those you love. It puts a burden on them that they cannot possibly bear. All the psychiatric opinions show you. I have a revelation, that's why I'm going into this suicide. It puts a burden on them, and all psychiatric opinion says that it is done out of an act of hostility. You hate somebody, not yourself. You hate somebody else. You're mad at somebody else. Because when you leave your children in an act of suicide, or leave somebody in this group alone by an act of suicide, it's a terrible crime against the people. And I know it's getting blessed quietness, but it's true anyway. One who's done it saying amen, so you ought to be able to say amen. Some of you were thinking about it. So don't talk to me about wanting to die. I know what that is every day. But I'm too responsible to do anything intentionally to give you trouble. That's why I've built you places and built you educational centers. I have never wanted to go that way because I felt it was a compromise with fascist America. I felt like I should be a revolutionary from the beginning and should go someplace. And I have been places, and I have fought like hell to let the oppressors set my people free in other parts of the world, which I will not go into. I have fought like hell in the hills of some places. And I had to fight like hell with myself to get myself to come back into this mess. It was so difficult. But I felt this is what I had to do. And now, you say you're changing your tune. Our enemies have already decided our course. Judases must come, and they come for one purpose, to make us grow up. I have no choice anymore. Our enemies are bloodthirsty. Our enemies who have walked and supped, dined, and taken my help, even one I laid my life down for. Even our enemies have walked with us who have been consoled by me, who have been helped out of trouble by me, who have been saved by me. Our enemies are bent on destroying us. Well, they won't achieve that. The only way they won't is we're going to out-ace them. We got an ace up our sleeve. What is it you call them? We're going to trump the situation. We've got the trump card. They think they're going to push us in the corner. And they think they're going to do this. I was so proud of one of my sons. His mother said, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And he said, let me tell you, if anything happens to my father, I'm paraphrasing for reasons best serving my people. He said, if anything happens, now I will leave the rest to your imagination. You say you want something to hate? The sister there, I felt her thoughts, her need, her question in her mind, and I answered it. She says, should I feel sorry for people who won't listen to you? No. I'll tell you, you should feel more pity for Mr. Nixon than you do those who have walked. See, circumstances are taking care of it too. You know what that word change means? You know what those word change means with my tongue? Go back and read my last life cycle. Read it. You'll know what it means. You know what means that lisping and that stuttering? Means that people have worn out the very capillaries and the vascular system, all the blood to my brain. I have been worn out fighting for truth. I've kept myself going. So don't feel badly. Whatever I do, sometimes the children feel resentful. Well, they're going to lose you. Young, they've made me live 150 years already. The system, I'm not meaning you. They've made me live 150 years. They worked me night and day. The enemies have cooked up things that you wouldn't imagine. You wouldn't believe if I were to tell you what these enemies who once walked with you have done in the past week. They're dirty, lying, devious, wicked, steely. So go back and read about my last life. You'll understand what's happening. So circumstances have taken care of it. Circumstances. That doesn't mean I'm going to die tomorrow. It means I've had little strokes in my brain because I've taken upon the infirmities of others. I bear the infirmities of others. It affects my speech flow because I've got to cry aloud while I can because nobody else will stand in the gap of the hedge. One met me in the aisle and says, there goes the only reasonable man left in the world. And I thought, oh, how unfortunately true. Mike Cartmell passed me and says, the only reasonable man left. Well, it's not quite true in the sense, but I knew what he was saying from the depths of his heart. It is a fact that I've got something to say that's unique in time and space, and it's eating me up, and it has lived. It's been 1,000 lifetimes I have lived.